understand illogic in your argument. I hadn't thought of the relation between Section 2 and Section 3 in the way you just said. You said, now, Section 2 was in order to help the states. The Congress wanted to help the states. But then in Section 3, the Congress doesn't help the states, which have come to the conclusion that gay marriage is lawful. So that's inconsistent.
No, they treat them, which is to say they are preserving, they're helping the states in the sense of having each sovereign make this decision for
themselves. We're helping the states do, if they do what we want them to, which is not consistent with the historic commitment of marriage and of questions of the rights of children to the state.
With respect, Justice Kennedy, that's not right. No state loses any benefits by recognizing same-sex marriage. Things stay the same. What they don't do is they don't sort of open up an additional class of beneficiaries under their state law for that get additional federal benefits. But things stay the same. And that's why,
they're not a question of additional benefits. I mean, they touch every aspect of life. Your partner is sick. Social Security. I mean, it's pervasive. It's not as though, well, there's this little federal sphere and it's only in a tax question. It's as Justice Kennedy said, 1,100 statutes, and it affects every area of life. And so you are really diminishing what the state has said is marriage. You're saying, no, state, there are two kinds of marriages, the full marriage and then the sort of skim milk marriage.
With respect, Justice Ginsburg, that's not what the federal government is saying. The federal government is saying that within its own realm, in federal policies, where we assume that the federal government has the authority to define the terms that appear in their own statutes, that in those areas, they are going to have their own definition.
Mr. Clement, for the most part, and historically, the only uniformity that the federal government has pursued is that it's uniformly recognized the marriages that are recognized by the state. So this was a real difference in the uniformity that the federal government was pursuing. And it suggests that maybe Congress had something different in mind than uniformity. So we have a whole series of cases which suggest the following, which suggest that when Congress targets a group that is not everybody's favorite group in the world, that we look at those cases with some, even if they're not suspect, with some rigor to say, do we really think that Congress was doing this for uniformity reasons, or do we think that Congress's judgment was infected by dislike, by fear, by animus, and so forth? I guess the question that this statute raises, this statute that does something that's really never been done before, is whether that sends up a pretty good red flag that that's what was going on.
A couple of responses, Justice Kagan. First of all, I think I would take issue with the premise, first of all, that this is such an unusual federal involvement on an issue like marriage. Look at historically, not only has the federal government defined marriage for its own purposes distinctly in the context of particular programs, it's also intervened in other areas, including in state prerogatives. I mean, there's a reason that four state constitutions include a prohibition of polygamy. It's because the federal Congress insisted on them. There's a reason that in the wake of the Civil War and in Reconstruction, Congress specifically wanted to provide benefits for spouses of freed slaves who fought for the Union. In order to do it, it essentially had to create state law marriages because in the Confederacy, the slaves couldn't get married. So they developed their own state, essentially, a federal sort of condition to define who was married under those laws. So where there have been needs in the past to get involved, the federal government has gotten involved. The other point I would make, but I also eventually want to get around to the animus point, but the other point I would make is when you look at Congress doing something that is unusual, that deviates from the way they've proceeded in the past, you have to ask, well, was there a good reason? And in a sense, you have to understand that in 1996, something's happening that is, in a sense, forcing Congress to choose between its historic practice of deferring to the states and its historic practice of preferring uniformity. Up until 1996, it essentially has it both ways. Every state has the traditional definition. Congress knows that's the definition that's embedded in every federal law. It says, fine, we can defer. Okay, 1996.
Well, is what happened in 1996, and I'm going to quote from the House report here, is that Congress decided to reflect and honor a collective moral judgment and to express moral disapproval of homosexuality. Is that what happened in 1996?
Does the House report say that? Of course the House report says that. And if that's enough to invalidate the statute, then you should invalidate the statute. But that's never been your approach, especially under rational basis or even rational basis plus, if that's what you're suggesting. This Court, even when it's applying more heightened scrutiny, the O'Brien case we cite, it suggests, look, we're not going to strike down a statute just because a couple of legislatures may have had an improper motive. We're going to look, and under rational basis, we look, is there any rational basis for the statute? And so, sure, the House report says some things that we've never invoked in trying to defend the statute, but the House report says other things, like Congress was trying to promote democratic self-governance. And in a situation where a unelected state judiciary in Hawaii is on the verge of deciding this highly contentious, highly divisive issue for everybody, for the states, for the other states, and for the federal government by borrowing principles, it makes sense.
Okay. Is there any problem under federalism principles?
With the federal government?
With Congress passing a law saying we are going to adopt a different definition of marriage than those states that don't recognize same-sex marriage. We don't care whether you do as a matter of state law. When it comes to federal benefits, same-sex marriage will be recognized.
It has certainly been argued in this case by others that whether or not that's in the enumerated powers of the federal government. For the reasons Justice Kagan mentioned, we think the federalism principles go toward the novelty question. I think whether or not the federal government could have its own definition of marriage for all purposes would be a very closely argued question.
I don't understand your answer. Is your answer yes or no? Is there a federalism problem with that, or isn't there a federalism?
I think the federal government could extend benefits to gay couples to equalize things on a programmatic basis to make things more equal. Whether the federal government could have its own definition of marriage, I think it would be very closely argued whether that's outside the enumerated
part. Well, it's just all these statutes use the term marriage, and the federal government says in all of these statutes, when it says marriage, it includes same-sex couples, whether the state acknowledges them to be married or not.
But that, I don't know if that would work because they wouldn't be.
Never mind whether it would work. I don't care if it works. Does it create a federalism problem?
The power to marry people is a power that rests with the states. The federal government doesn't issue marriage licenses. It never has.
It's not doing that. It's just saying for purposes, just what it's doing here. It says for purposes of all these federal statutes, when we say marriage, we mean, instead of saying we mean heterosexual marriage, we mean, whenever we use it, heterosexual and homosexual marriage. That's what it says.
As long as people were validly married under state law and met the requirements of state law to get married.
No.
I'm not sure that the federal government, if this answers your question, Justice Scalia, I'm not sure that the federal government could create a new federal marriage that would be some kind of marriage that states don't permit.
Well, let me get to the question I asked Mr. Clement. It just gets rid of the word marriage, takes it out of the U.S. Code completely, substitutes something else, and defines it as to include same-sex couples.
Yes.
Surely it can do that.
Yes, that would not be based on the state.
So it's just the word marriage? It's just the fact that they use this term marriage?
Well, that's what the federal government has always chosen to do, and that's the way the federal law is structured. And it's always been structured for 200 years based on the state police power to define who's married. The federal government, I presume, could decide to change that if it wanted, and somehow it would be very strange for all 1,100 laws, but for certain programs to have different requirements other than marriage, and that would be constitutional or unconstitutional depending on the distinction.
If the estate tax follows state law, would not that create an equal protection problem similar to the one that exists here? Suppose there were a dispute about the state of residence of your client and her partner's spouse. Was it New York? Was it some other state where same-sex marriage would not have been recognized? And suppose the state court said the state of residence is a state where it's not recognized. Would you not have essentially the same equal protection argument there that you have now?
Let me answer that question very clearly. Our position is only with respect to the 9 states, and I think there are 2 others, that recognize these marriages. So if my client, if a New York couple today marries and moves to North Carolina, and one of, which has a constitutional amendment, a state constitutional amendment, and one of the spouses dies, they would not, since estate taxes determine where the person dies, they would not be entitled to the deduction. That is not our claim here. Moreover, Justice Alito, in connection with a whole host of federal litigation, there's been federal litigation for hundreds of years with respect to the residency of where people live or don't live or whether they're divorced or not divorced throughout the federal system. And the federal government has always handled that and has never before, and we believe this is why it's unconstitutional, separated out a class of married gay couples solely because they were
just
gay.
Just if I could follow up with one question. What if the hypothetical surviving spouse partner in North Carolina brought an equal protection argument, saying that there is no — it is unconstitutional to treat me differently because I am a resident of North Carolina rather than a resident of New York. What would be — would that be discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation? What would be the level of scrutiny? Yeah, would it survive?
That would be certainly a different case. It would be more similar to the case I think you heard yesterday than the case that we have today. We certainly believe that sexual orientation discrimination should get heightened scrutiny. If it doesn't get heightened scrutiny, obviously it would be a rational basis, and the question would be what the state interests were in not allowing couples, for example, in North Carolina who are gay to get married. No one has identified in this case, and I don't think we've heard it in the argument from my friend, any legitimate difference between married gay couples on the one hand and straight married couples on the other that can possibly explain the sweeping, undifferentiated, and categorical discrimination of DOMA, Section 3 of DOMA. And no one has identified any legitimate federal interest that is being served by Congress's decision for the first time in our nation's history to undermine the determinations of the sovereign states with respect to eligibility for marriage. I would respectfully contend that this is because there is none. Rather, as the title of the statute makes clear, DOMA was enacted to defend against the marriages of gay people. This discriminatory purpose was rooted in moral disapproval, as Justice Kagan pointed
out. What do you think of his? The argument that I heard was, to put the other side, at least one part of it, as I understand it, said, look, the federal government needs a uniform rule. There has been this uniform one-man, one-woman rule for several hundred years or whatever. And there's a revolution going on in the states. We either adopt the revolution, or push it along a little, or we stay out of it. And I think Mr. Clement was saying, well, we've decided to stay out of it. The way to stay out of it is to go with the traditional thing. I mean, that's an argument. So your answer to that argument is what?
I think it's an incorrect argument, Justice Breyer, for this reason.
I understand you do. I'd like to know the reason.
Of course. Congress did not stay out of it. Section 3 of DOMA is not staying out of it. Section 3 of DOMA is stopping the recognition by the federal government of couples who are already married solely based on their sexual orientation. And what it's doing is undermining, as you can see in the briefs of the states of New York and others, it's undermining the policy decisions made by those states that have permitted gay couples to marry. States that have already resolved the cultural, the political, the moral, whatever other controversies, they're resolved in those states. And by fencing those couples up, couples who are already married and treating them as unmarried for purposes of federal law, you're not taking it one step at a time, you're not promoting caution, you're putting a stop button on it, and you're having discrimination for the first time in our country's history against a class of married couples.